This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana, Friday Politics on WWNO New Orleans and WRKF Baton Rouge. Robin Dow producing, and signature support for our program is from the Office of Mayor President Sharon Weston Broom, East Baton Rouge Parish, and our show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757, and emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. In-house is Senator Cleo Fields, longtime Louisiana lawmaker, first elected in 1987 to the Louisiana Senate, and then was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives from 1993 to 97. He lost his district because of what was viewed as gerrymandering, and that district spread all across the state in every metro area except New Orleans. And now there is another district that has been drawn by the lawmakers that would be favorable to Senator Fields, and he has announced his candidacy for the 6th district, currently held by Garrett Graves. But if Graves runs for re-election, and by the way, the election is now inside 34 weeks, he will have to do so in a much differently configured district than he currently has. So that's where we are, and we're going to talk with Senator Fields about what's happening at the legislature and in the political realm. This is a busy, busy year, and this is the third session in a few months for Louisiana lawmakers. And hope you're eating your Wheaties, Senator Cleo Fields.
I am trying. Good to be with you, Jim.
Well, good to be with you as always. But for those who say that this is not a full-time job, I think it's evident that if you're a lawmaker, you're spending a lot of quality time at the Capitol. It's tough for people in Baton Rouge. I can only imagine how it is for people from Winfield and Lake Charles and other parts of the state.
Oh, it's very tough for people from Shreveport, anywhere. It's just tough for people in Baton Rouge. But outside of Baton Rouge, you have to basically shut your business totally down. So it's a tough deal, particularly when you have a number of special sessions back to back. I mean, it becomes a full-time job.
Well, the governor is certainly a more conservative leader of our state than his predecessor, John Bel Edwards, but he didn't get everything he wanted in his first session. He got most of what he wanted in session number 2 on crime, and now it appears lawmakers are largely going to go in the direction the governor wishes this time. How far will that take us from where we've been? Is it going to be a sweeping change that happens almost immediately, or is this going to be a process?
Well, it's going to be a process, it is a process. But there are, you know, totally different views between the former governor and the present governor, and the former legislature and this legislature. I mean, there are many more Republicans in that make up both the House and the Senate, and obviously the governor is from the Republican Party. So there is a difference between, you know, last year and this year. There'll be some changes.
Well, it is amazing that John Bel Edwards basically held the line. He got probably about half of what he wanted, and he had a legislature that was overwhelmingly against him. And it was a remarkable tour de force performance by John Bel Edwards. But he's gone, and now we have a governor who's largely in sync with the Republican majority. And we saw that in the crime session. Many thought that maybe we went too far, because I do recall when Governor Edwards was in office, a lot of those criminal justice reforms were backed by Republicans, but most of them have been either chipped away or completely eradicated. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and let me just say, you mentioned Governor John Bel Edwards. I mean, he had a way he knew that he was in a minority as it relates to the legislature, but he used that veto pen, and he used it wisely. And you know, people say, well, he was, you know, one of the first governors to be overturned. But listen, he was effective in that
role. And most of his vetoes were upheld.
Upheld, by far. And so, but in terms of this legislature, you look in 16 and 17, I wasn't in the legislature at the time, but they did a lot of criminal justice reform. And you're right, a lot of Republicans actually supported the bills. And those bills were, you know, we realized at that time that locking up people was not the answer to the crime problem, and that just cost us more money. And this past special session, we've rolled back you know, some of those initiatives. And when, you know, I'm on finance now, and when they would come before finance, the question was, well, what's the cost, what's the fiscal impact of this bill? And it was always indeterminable. So, I want to be optimistic, but I do think many pieces that we passed this past legislative session are going to not to reduce crime, not one iota, but is going to add more to our, you know, on the fiscal side of our state, and it's not going to address the crime problem, like open carry, for example. I mean, concealed carry. I mean, I think that adds to crime. I don't think
it could, but some people adhere to the Ted Cruz adage that the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is for a good guy to have a gun. Well, we're about to see. We're about to see. And this has been done in other states, but shall we say there will be no move, and even John Bel Edwards was very conservative on guns, no move to do anything with assault weapons, which I think is a much larger issue than concealed carry, because you could have a gun in your pocket right now and I'd never know it. And I'm sure some people carried weapons and just didn't broadcast it, and I know their guns at the Capitol. I know they're guns at the Capitol,
I mean, assault weapons, when you mention that, I mean, that's been an issue that I've been fighting ever since I was in Congress. I mean, because I believe that, you know, many of these weapons are used for one purpose and one purpose only, and that's to kill as many people as quick as possible. And, they're not used for hunting purposes unless you hunt people. I mean, there's just no reason for us to have, you know, these assault weapons in our society.
We will go to the phones in just a moment, and the always topical Cleo Fields is in the House. He's now a candidate for Congress, 877-217-5757. But Senator Fields is still at the Capitol, and there is much happening. The session is slated to end June 3rd, and there's talk of a constitutional convention. We'll catch up with Senator Fields about that, but a story that emanated this morning: Louisiana saw its population drop another 14,000 last year. That's a loss of 84,000 people between 20 and 23, which means if things keep going as they are in 2030, when we have another census, 8 years from now, we'll have one less congressperson. We'll be doing this all over again, and we'll be talking about whether there should be two majority black districts with five rather than six if we don't change it. Can we change it, or is this a lost cause?
Well, I certainly hope so. I certainly hope so. And we're losing, you know, population. It's two problems. One, there is a real, you know, it is real that we are losing population, but there is another problem. There are a lot of people who do not, you know, take the time to fill out the census. So it's a dual problem, and it really hurts the state. I remember when we had eight members of Congress, you know, then, you know, seven,
six. And on our way to five.
And on our way to five, if we don't, and we got to do a better job this upcoming census and you know, get more people to fill out the census form so that, you know, at the very least, you know, we give a good representation of, you know, what our numbers are to the federal government. And I think that's really important.
877-217-5757 is your number. Mike in Baton Rouge in Villa Del Rey, you're on with Senator Fields. Hello, Mike.
Hello, good morning. Information that I've learned from Talk Louisiana is that Lane Grigsby donated to some of your campaigns, and that your good friends with Governor Jeff Landry. Governor Jeff Landry being full-blown MAGA, I need to know, as your future constituent, if you recognize January 6th.
All right. What about Governor Landry and his association with the former president? That gives some people like Mike, who's a longtime labor leader. By the way, I don't know that I've ever talked about Lane Grigsby and Cleo Fields, but we have talked about Jeff Landry and Cleo Fields. And I've said that I don't view it as a bad thing that Jeff Landry has a relationship with some prominent minority leaders in the state or Democrats. I think that's actually a good thing, but some people would rather you not be hanging out with that kind.
I think that's a problem for our state, and I think that's one of the problems we have in Congress. I mean, people don't talk. Do I have a relationship with the present governor? Yes, I had a relationship with the former governor. I plan to have a relationship as long as I'm in the legislature with any governor. Do we agree? No, not on most things, but. I think people are nearsighted when they take the approach that you shouldn't have a relationship because you have a different party. The other question was Lane, did have Lane Grigsby donated to my campaign? I think he has. I mean, I think he supported me when I ran for the Senate this past time, but he also supported my opponent the time before that.
Okay, back after this. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757 for Senator Cleo Fields, Democrat from Baton Rouge, and what a long and distinguished career in Louisiana politics, not only representing the state Senate three times, but also a member of the U.S. House for two terms. And Cleo Fields ran for governor in the year of 1995 when he was 32 years old. And as mentioned, he got more votes in 1995 in defeat against Mike Foster than Jeff Landry received in victory in 2023 against 15 other candidates. Willie in Houma. Willie, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Just listening, just turning the radio on, going to another job site. I heard him talking about the open carry, concealed carry, only causing more more crime, you know, more danger, and the adult 17-year-old adult carjacking kind of tried as adults is not gonna help one iota. What statistics are you going from, or is that hyperbole?
Well, first of all, in terms of the concealed carry, look, my view is that. That is not going to solve the crime problem. I mean, I think when you got police officers who their job is to pull people over when they violate the law, and every time, you know, they pull a person over, that person may very well be carrying a firearm. I don't know how that helps the crime problem in the state, but I was outvoted by the members of the Senate and the members of the House and is now in the law, you know. I just think we need to deal with the crime issue from, you know, more of a, you know, holistic perspective. I mean, if you go to Angola, you go to any of our penal institutions, you will find that most of these folk who are in jail are high school dropouts. They didn't finish high school. They didn't go to, education. There is a nexus between education and incarceration. But I understand, you know, your view and the view of many in the legislature. We're going to wait and we're going to see if it has a positive impact on the crime problem in this state. I certainly hope so, but I realistically doubt it.
Patricia in Magnolia Woods in the Baton Rouge area. Hello, Patricia. You're on Talk Louisiana with Senator Fields.
Good morning. As a voter, I am wondering if you could tell me what your accomplishments have been while in the Louisiana legislature and, or what you have done for your district. Thanks.
Thank you very much for the question. Very good question. Education, and I hate to keep talking about education, but I introduced a bill and we made kindergarten mandatory. Kindergarten was not mandatory, but most kids learned the most between birth to 5 years of age. And I thought there was a need to not mandate that kids start in the first grade, but mandate that they start in kindergarten. Actually, we worked with the governor and we put more money towards early childhood education. Early childhood education, in my view, is the is the future of our state. I mean, if we don't educate our kids when they're young, you know, I think we're failing as a state, and quite frankly, we're failing as a nation.
You have some legislation pertaining to student athletes. How will that work if you get it through the hoops?
Yeah, this year I'm introducing a bill that would provide that all, you know, high schools and colleges must provide mental health counseling to student athletes. I mean, people do not realize the pressures of a student athlete. I mean, you know, and it's public. When you're on the field with basketball court, and you play in a game and you throw an interception, or if you miss a free throw, you know, sometimes people boo. If the game is tight, they just, you know, lose it. And those kids have to go home and they have to deal with that, not to mention when they're injured, you know. I just think there needs to be counseling at all of our high schools and our colleges. Most of our colleges already have it, but that's one of my big initiatives this session. Let me just put one more piece of legislation in. Last year we made AEDs mandatory in all public and private schools across the state, and that's all educational institutions, because they save lives, and that's a real important step, in my view, in the right direction.
Over the last few days, a story that's been making the rounds here in Baton Rouge, the Metro Council approved a measure that, of course, has a lot of ways to go, but it's the big first step. It involves a new arena at LSU that would be funded by members of the Tiger Athletic Foundation, but it also means basically downsizing the River Center and some also alterations to the Memorial Park area, Memorial Stadium area. Your thoughts about, at first blush, whether this is a prudent move?
Well, I mean, I don't see many downsizes to it. I mean, downsize to it. It really. I mean, if we're going to be a number one Class A venue place, Baton Rouge, to attract major conventions, major anything, major sporting events, you know, we're going to have a facility that's conducive to it, major concerts, so forth and so on. And I think what they're attempting to do is put Baton Rouge in that, you know, in that arena so that they can compete for the big conventions, big concerts, big things like that. And, initially I don't see a whole bunch of downside.
Well, we will be talking about this, and as of now, we're slated to have the mayor on next week, and this is a story that has a lot of tentacles, and we will be following every one of them. Now, Hal in Monroe asked about the legislature at large, and of course, you follow what's going on at the Capitol. He notes that you were in that race against Mike Foster, and one of Foster's big things was to have no mandatory helmets for motorcycle riders, and a bill got out of the House committee to do just that. We already have extremely high insurance rates, as we know, but yet this may very well make it. I don't know, but it's made it through a big first step. Your thoughts?
I'm against it. I mean, I was against it back then, and I'm against it today. I mean, I just think if you're going to ride a motorbike in Louisiana on Louisiana highways, I mean, you should have a helmet. I mean, that's I mean, to me, it's common sense. I mean, I don't ride motorbikes, but if I did, I would certainly wear a helmet. And I just can't see, you know, the public policy of the state saying you don't. I just, you know, if it gets to the floor of the Senate, I'm going to vote against it, because I just don't think it's in the interest of public safety.
It is curious that some of these people who would agree with you, but they say it's about freedom. But then when it comes to something like reproductive capacity, they're against freedom on that level. They don't want the woman to make a choice. They want to make the choice for the woman. Is there a bit of inconsistency there, Senator Fields?
Well, absolutely. I mean, but you know, I deal with it every day, all day. And I mean, but it's a part of it's the nature of the beast. You know, all of us are not alike. All of us don't think the same. And at the end of the day, it takes all of us together in that legislature to make legislation. This is one, you know, I try to be as consistent, you know, as possible, you know, with the way I vote on legislation. I've been consistently against it. Governor Mike Foster and I talked about it, and bless his soul, when he was governor, and I shared with him how I felt about it and voted against it. When he was in the Senate, in fact. And we'll do the same this time.
Well, people who are saying Jeff Landry is the most conservative governor we've had, he's conservative on some things, just like Mike Foster was, and people forget how conservative Foster was. He was a man who wanted to test every state worker for marijuana.
Right.
Imagine if they did that today, Senator Fields.
Oh, that would, you know, that, and look, that was another issue that the governor and I fought on. But at the end of the day, look, every governor has his perspective, and I've worked with all of them, and plan to continue to work with the governor, and plan to, if the people bless me, work with the president, no matter who he is, because that's how you get things done. You just can't say, "Well, you are a Republican, so I don't want to talk to you." Don't have.
Well, we'll go to Henry at the Country Club and some more folks when we return with Senator Fields. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, Senator Cleo Fields, for a few more moments, and then we are slated to be joined from Washington by Mark Ballard, who covers the nation's capital for the Picayune and the Advocate. 877-217-5757, Henry at the Country Club of Baton Rouge. You're on the air with Senator Cleo Fields.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
Both y'all know that I like to go out to the pistol range and shoot a few holes in pieces of paper every now and then. One thing that I have learned is that people, and I've complained to Mr. Jim about this before, people in Louisiana need safety training. For God's sake, if you get a hunting license, you need to take a hunter safety course. What's the possibility of adding some safety training to this no concealed permit law that they've passed?
Well, I mean, basically we had that before we passed this bill. I mean, in order to get a permit, you had to be trained. So this the bill we just passed during the special session just basically says if you own it rightfully, you can carry it without training. And I really don't think, Henry, that's in the best interest of public safety. But we will see how it all works out. I hope the best, but I just feel it put law enforcement and others in a disadvantaged position when, you know, people are carrying weapons without any training whatsoever.
There is some talk, and I mean, it's really buzzing at the Capitol about a constitutional convention, and I mean a quick one, like right now, involving current lawmakers. Where is this going?
Well, we're in discussions. I mean, the president of the Senate is in discussions with the governor and the speaker of the House. I don't think no decisions have been made as of yet, but there is talk about the legislature actually going into session and having a constitutional convention. Some of the issues, Jim, are, you know, for example, if you use the House members and the Senate members, there are 105 House members and there are 39 senators, then the question would be, are you giving the House more authority, more power than the Senate? So that won't necessarily work. So that, you know, there are some discussions about that. Secondly, does it make sense to go into a constitutional convention and fail? So there are some discussions about, hey, well, what is it that we want to accomplish? Can we get the votes to accomplish those measures? So, no one knows at this point when it will happen. There's a lot of talk about it happening, but there are a lot of things that need to be worked out on the front end.
Are there some issues that are on the front burner?
Yes. Look, I think our Constitution is way too big. I do think that we have too much in the Constitution. There are a lot of things that we have put in the Constitution that needs to come out, but you got to think about how did it get in the Constitution in the first place. A member introduced a bill, he had to get two-thirds of the legislature to agree, and then it had to go to the voters of the state, and the voters said yes. So that's how it got into the Constitution. Is that too much? I mean, Yes. I mean, I think what we need to do, we need to decide on what parameters that shouldn't be touched, and those things that can be just legislative statutes or just laws. I don't know if we're going to get there, because what I view as important to me, like the Minimum Foundation, for example, may not be important to another member. So, and that's one of the calamities we have now.
Well, it's a busy first year for Governor Landry and the new legislature, and you'll be, if you're not already on the campaign trail, I think you're already visiting places. You're an announced candidate in the 6th District, the newly configured district, now represented by Garrett Graves, who's fighting the new district in court. Based on what's happened of late, I don't think his chances are good at stopping this, but do you anticipate a race with him, or are you just waiting and seeing?
Well, first of all, there's a hearing that's going to take place in April by a 3-judge panel, and let's talk about how we got here. I mean, my preference, for example, was to send the district to Monroe, but the district ended up going to Shreveport. But why was that? One, because, we have the luxury in the state of having two of the most powerful people in the U.S. Congress, which is a good thing. We got the Speaker of the House and we got the Majority Leader. No, I don't think there's ever been a situation where one single state had that much power. And then the person who introduced the bill to change the district, because the courts, district court, the appeals court, and the Supreme Court signal, you have to have two majority black districts. And at the end of the day, his congresswoman, is a female, and he didn't want to do anything to disrupt the only female member of Congress. So at the end of the day, that's how it ended up going to Shreveport. I've been in this position. I've served in Congress.
You lost a seat
27 years ago. The legislature, the same legislature, decided that we should not have two majority black districts, and I decided to come home. I know it's a tough deal because but we only have 7 members of Congress, and we should have at least 2 majority black opportunity districts.
We had 6 now House members and 2 U.S. senators. So yeah, we've lost 20% of our delegation, and as mentioned, based on population trends, that may be 30%. When the new districts are drawn 8 years from now. Let's take a call or two, but please be concise as we round the corner and head for Mark Ballard in Washington. Trish in Grand Coteau. Trish, you're on with Cleo Fields.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am going to make a rash generalization. The legislature is allowing concealed carry, which is allowing, I'm going to make a rash generalization here, men to kill viable people. They have raised the speed limit on the Basin Bridge, which is making it more dangerous, and again, allowing bad drivers to kill viable people. And yet women do not have decision over their own health choices.
All right. Well, Trish believes there is a disconnect here.
Well, I agree with it. Look, women should have the right to determine, what they do with their bodies, along with their physician. And I've often said those decisions are between a woman and a God, woman and a conscience, a woman and a priest, pastor, not a woman and her legislature, not a woman and her governor. I just don't think we belong there. I think that's a personal decision, and it's a decision that a woman should make with the consultation with her spiritual leader, a family, and not her legislature.
Women still comprise a majority of the electorate, and we only had one woman on the ballot for governor last year, and she got fewer than 2% of the vote. So, but she was not a liberal by any means, Sharon Hewitt we're talking about. But for those who complain about Governor Landry, they had the opportunity last year to vote for somebody else. And most people didn't vote. Almost two-thirds of our state of registered voters did not cast a ballot. And Senator Fields and I have talked about this. If the Democratic turnout had been the same as it was when David Duke ran, Sean Wilson would be governor of Louisiana right now. So we're just not energized on a statewide level the way we are on a national level. And turnout will be high. It'll be extremely high in Louisiana on November 5th, even though we know Donald Trump's going to carry Louisiana. There is no doubt, as if he's breathing, he's going to carry our state. So, Senator Fields, how do you explain this?
Well, I mean, look, I've said, I was questioning one of the civil rights leaders who ran for president, and I said, you know, people just apathetic. They need to get out and vote. And he challenged me. He said, listen, there are no apathetic voters. They're just uninspired voters. It's our job to inspire them. So at the end of the day, I mean, it's going to be incumbent upon people like me and all elected officials. We have to inspire people to go out and vote. We got to give them a reason to go out and vote. I'm certainly going to play my role this upcoming election. We got a very important election. We have a presidential election in November, and I'm going to do everything I can do from one side of the state to the other to inspire people to go out and vote.
Robin says, one final caller for Congressman Fields, Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on. Downtown Baton Rouge.
Thanks. Thank you, as always, Jim. Good morning to you, your audience, and Senator Fields, good morning.
Good morning, Stuart.
The final topic that you guys were talking about, inspiring voters, Senator, with the extraordinary political machine that you have, and with Sean Wilson having been a wonderful candidate, African-American, as everyone knows, and what have you, being a Democrat, you're a Democrat. Why didn't you, let me back up a little bit. Many feel that you sold the Democratic Party out and the African-Americans out because you did not zealously campaign on behalf of Mr. Wilson.
Could you have done more?
Yeah. Look, I don't know what zealously mean. I mean, I gave, I did everything I could do for Sean from a financial perspective, helped raise the money, and did everything he requested of me. Listen, people, when people run for office, you don't take over their campaigns. You do what they request of you to do. And I tell people, look, the last thing I want to do is to do anything you don't want me to do. I did every single thing that Mr. Wilson requested of me, and a little bit more, quite frankly. But my job when a person is running for office is not to take over their campaign. It is to assist them. They guide their campaign. I wish the results would have been better, but they weren't. Did I do everything I was requested to do? Absolutely, and a little bit more.
Thank you, Senator Fields. Mark Ballard is next. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WWNO New Orleans and WRKF Baton Rouge, Politics Friday, and Mark Ballard is with us, the man who covers the nation's capital with the same earnest he patrolled the halls of the Louisiana Capitol for a generation, and much is happening both here and there. Your number again, 877-217-5757. Listener at talk@talklouisiana.org, Tracy at the state capitol, asked me to ask you about the House vote yesterday on TikTok. The House, actually it was Wednesday, with broad bipartisan support that would force TikTok's Chinese owner to either sell the popular video app or have it banned in the U.S. 352-65 was the vote in the House. Mark, people are fearful about TikTok. What is your intuition and your investigative work telling you about this bill, which faces a difficult road in the Senate, where Senator Chuck Schumer, the Democrat from New York and majority leader, has been noncommittal?
Well, I think that it's not going to go anywhere in the Senate. What was happening is that members of Congress are concerned about having TikTok be owned by a company that's controlled by the Communist Party in China. And they were saying, this would never happen for like CBS or ABC. That just wouldn't be allowed. So because of this and because of the fear that the Chinese have access to personal information of Americans, they passed this bill, and it was overwhelmingly passed and in the House, passed this legislation so that it would basically tell them to hurry up and make a decision. And if they don't make a decision, then that would be the end of TikTok in America. And so that's where it goes. But in the Senate, it's not quite as on board with this as they are in the House. And I think that we're going to see kind of a slow walk in the Senate on it. However, there is a lot of support in the Senate, and it could be something of a push.
Well, the number of Americans on TikTok is now numbered at 170 million. So that's about half the country on TikTok, including every man, woman, and child in the U.S. If this were to actually be banned, I would imagine there would be some pushback.
Well, I would imagine so, too. I mean, it is a an issue that is going that a lot of Americans, a lot of people are interested in because they use TikTok. They like TikTok. They want to keep it, you know. But then there are these other issues that have to do with the security, the FBI, the CIA, the National Security Agency all came to the Hill and kind of outlined what the problems were, and that was what led the House to do this.
Now, on another matter, Speaker Johnson, who, of course, was large and in charge at the State of the Union address, seated right behind the president, along with the vice president of the United States, so he got a lot of face time, maybe more than he wanted. He's now still in the forefront of this dispute over whether funding for the war that Ukraine has been forced to fight should be assisted by the United States, and Johnson has been steadfast about tying this to some kind of border agreement, which the President of the United States thought he had. He actually had agreed to the Republican bill on the border. What's going on?
Well, he's kind of stuck with it. The large part is that a group of the conservative Republicans are against funding for or further funding for Ukraine. President Trump is also against further funding for the Ukraine. And the arguments that they raise is that, well, we don't know where that money is going. We don't know how it's being spent. We don't want it to prop up the economy, but only to be spent on weaponry. And then, you know, there's also this, we need to take care of the border before we start taking care of the problems of other countries. And sitting before the House, before Speaker Johnson, is a bill that would provide that funding. It passed overwhelmingly in the Senate, but Johnson's not putting it on the floor. However, he showed a little bit of wiggle room over the last few days. Minority leader in the Senate, McConnell, said, "Let's get this job done. Come on, put the bill on the floor." And Johnson gave a little wiggle room. He was speaking to senators at a retreat in the Library of Congress, and then the Republicans are holding House Republicans are holding a retreat in West Virginia this week. And he's been saying, maybe we can put something out there so that there can be, you know, funding for the Ukraine. He's pushing or suggesting anyway. I mean, there's not a bill up yet. He's just kind of talking about it, that perhaps there'll be sort of a lend-lease type of arrangement that the House would accept. You know, he says that is something that former President Trump also kind of supports, and that would be, where they would, like World War II, where they, you know, would lend weaponry and to the Ukraine on the theory that we'd be repaid at some point in the future. So that's kind of where it stands right now. McConnell, the Republican minority leader in the Senate, is saying, you know, we don't have that much time to waste. I mean, we're talking about the Ukraine pretty much ran out of money a couple of months ago, and they're having to recycle weaponry right now, and and they're having to give up territory.
All right.
And he wants to do it faster.
Another item that this one is from Clayton in Uptown New Orleans, asking about the story this morning regarding the Atlanta DA, Fonnie Willis. She can stay on the Donald Trump case if her ex-boyfriend withdraws, who this man, Nathan Wade, was the lead prosecutor. And this is a matter that has gummed up the works. And no matter what happens, Mark, it appears this trial is not going to take place this year. And then it becomes less of a theatrical spectacle with Donald Trump either in office, in which he will probably be immune from any kind of federal prosecution, or out of office, in which he no longer is the imminent possibility to return to office. So there we are. But the case in New York City a week from Monday with Stormy Daniels is still on. It is a criminal case. It is in state court. He can't get out of it as easily as far as pushing back the trial date or having the charges dismissed. So the president, former president, Mr. Trump, still remains in some legal peril. 88 counts still remain against him. Your thoughts about how he will deal with this and move forward with an election that is now 33 and a half weeks from the finish line?
Well, one thing is that the Georgia case is also a state case. And I think that the Trump people were looking to blow her out of the water so that this particular ruling by the court in Fulton County is basically saying that they could continue with Fannie Willis, you know, should the lead prosecutor leave, that would be okay, and that would be, you know, able to push the case forward. Because it's a state case, he does not have the same, I mean, like the federal cases that he's facing, he can just, if he is president, he can just order his Department of Justice to shut him down. These he can't, is not quite as easy.
Well, a story today that we did discuss a bit with Cleo Fields: Louisiana saw its population shrink by more than 84,000 people in the last 3 years, including a drop of more than 14,000 last year. And, you know, even if we were gaining people, you have to gain at the same amount to retain your clout in Washington. And because of the fact that we were gaining over the last few decades, but not gaining as much as the rest of the country, we lost 2 congressional seats. And now it appears, unless something changes in the next 7 years, Mark, we're going to lose another congressional seat. And Louisiana is in big danger of having less clout. You talked about, and others have, about Mike Johnson and Steve Scalise, who carry a lot of mojo in Washington, but there are going to be fewer and fewer people representing the state on Capitol Hill. And from a business perspective, when you're losing people, it's hard to attract new businesses. Your position, what do you think of this?
Well, we need to remember that we were very close to losing a seat in the 2020 census. And so, I mean, there is a real good possibility of losing this seat and basically having only 5 members of the House of Representatives instead of 6.
That's where we are. Well, let's slide in James and Metairie, who's been waiting a bit. James,
yeah, good morning, Jim and Mark. Quickly. Mark, good morning. I want to get Mark's comments about something. But what's happening in North Carolina, Mark? We have a crazed guy, Mark Robertson, who wants to Robinson, who suggests that women shouldn't be allowed to vote in this country.
And he is considered by some to be the favorite to be the next governor of North Carolina. Mark, Louisiana gets blamed for, quote, crazy politics. Well, North Carolina is... they've got a guy who I think is not in the mainstream on many of his views, but your thoughts as we finish the hour.
Yeah, he is not. First of all, he's a black politician, so they're suspecting that they can pull off black voters in North Carolina, which is a purple state.
I'm sorry, but we do have to roll, but we'll pick up with that and more next week with Mark. Until next time, thanks for listening. Stay safe. Stay tuned.